every 13-year-old should know.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know. I'm Annabelle, here with my best friend and co-host, Wilder. Wilder, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. We just got out of school. We're about to have our graduation, which is sadly online, which is kind of weird.
But
at least we still have a graduation, I guess.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm doing good. You know, school's coming to an end. Finally, I feel like it was a really long year, but like it went by really, really fast. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it was because half of it was like online, in terms of COVID. But other than that, going to camp a week from today, actually, for 7 weeks.
Crazy.
Which I'm super excited for. Do you have any plans for the summer while there at all?
Yeah, I'm going to camp as well, but only for 3 weeks. I'm also going to be in New Jersey for a while. I'm going to do a ton of surfing there. I think we're just going to mostly be in New Jersey, and I'm going to be at sleepaway camp.
Nice. Sounds like a ton of fun. Here with us today, very special guest. You probably will know him. He's a pianist in one of my favorite bands, Mumford & Sons, the pianist. Everyone, please welcome the Ben Lovett! Woo!
Woo! Woo! Woo! Woo! Hey,
welcome.
Guys.
What's up, Ben?
Thank you so much. Thank
Hi,
you. Happy to be here. Excited for your summer plans of not having to just be on Zoom or whatever you've tormented yourself through for the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, school was not good.
School's not good when you're 13 at the best of times. So to have to do school remotely is pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you get into like being a musician? Like, when did you first start to like just play instruments, start singing, that kind of thing?
I was like 4 years old when I first picked up the piano. My sister was 13, funnily enough, and she was 9 years older than me, and she wanted to kind of make me do things because I guess I was kind of a boring four-year-old. So she mothered me into being creative and taught me how to play the piano and encouraged me to do dress up and to like get involved in any sort of performance art. And so all the way through my very, very young years, I was like putting on plays in the living room of the house. I was like creative writing. I wrote a book about my dog Samson when I was 8 years old called The Adventures of Samson. It's probably the only book I'm ever going to have written. I was lucky enough to have that thrust, you know, early on. And then went to school. I was at the same school from 8 to 18 years old. And when I went to school at 8, I met a guy called Marcus Mumford, and we started making music together at 8 years old. And by 13, we were like playing full paid gigs, which is crazy because we were
crazy by
young.
13.
Oh my God. Wait, you were only 13 when you started playing gigs? That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember I was like, we did this diamond wedding anniversary, which was like, I guess that's 75 years married, which means that everyone who was there was like 100 years old. And that was our first gig. And they were like, do you know how to play The Girl from Ipanema, which is just this random classic song? And I kind of had heard the melody before, but I had no idea how the lyrics went. I just knew that they were in Spanish. So I just said, sure. And we tried to play a version of it. And I just made up Spanish gibberish to this crowd. And somehow they thought it was endearing and still paid us like $50
each.
Oh, my
God.
And
wait, did they not realize?
I think they realized that we were so bad and we were trying. I mean, there's no way it was anything other than, like, in modern day, that would be a deeply offensive attempt to kind of ridicule the Spanish language. But I was trying my best to kind of honor the song. I just didn't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
I mean, you still got paid.
Still paid. That's
still I do that sometimes for my Spanish presentations, too. I'll just kind of mumble a few things. Don't tell my Spanish teacher. I don't think she catches on. But, no, that's so cool. You were so young. I mean, that's crazy. I guess that was like your first true kind of gig.
Yeah, I think it was. And it was funny because we were playing jazz music and like a mixture of playing jazz stuff and then like 80s things like Dire Straits cover songs. And it was a real mixture of things that were performing, but at the same time, I was listening to pretty heavy music. So I was into like Slipknot and Deftones. And then I was also really into like punk and pop punk. So my first gig was when I was 13 that I went to, that was like a proper like going out, leaving the house gig without my parents. And I had like neon blue hair dye. So my whole hair was like a blue mohawk. And I went to see No Doubt play one of their London shows. I don't know if you know No Doubt, Gwen Stefani.
Oh, yeah.
And that whole gang. So they were big in the 90s. And I remember going to that gig and just being so inspired watching them perform in front of like 5,000 people. I went back the next day. I loved it so much. I convinced my parents to let me go back and see the gig the second night.
That's amazing.
I can imagine you with the blue mohawk.
Thank you. I like to believe I still have it in me.
Yeah. Once a mohawk, always a mohawk. Yeah. how did you wind up with Mumford & Sons? Did the band kind of gradually just form like throughout like playing music? Like you kind of brought people together, or like was there like this one big thing that sort of happened? Or
yeah, well, like I said, like Marcus and I were friends since we were 8 and we were playing music together. But we met the other guys as teenagers, met Winston when we were 15 and then met Ted when we were 17. And we officially started the band when we were 18.
Oh, wow.
And we were, you know, kind of releasing records by 19, had a record deal at 21. And like the Grammys and all that sort of stuff, we were 22, 23. So we were still really young when all of this happened. But we felt like we'd been doing it our whole lives, because in some ways we had been doing it our whole lives. But yeah, it kind of just like came around pretty organically. It wasn't, you know, like sending out ads in the local, you know, Craigslist saying we're looking for a banjo player. It was kind of friends of friends and just getting into a rehearsal room and making music together.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Like with the whole band, what was your guys' like first show like?
I don't know what I'd even consider that first show. I mean, they were rough, right? Like we were ropey at the best of times, kind of forgetting the songs that we had written, singing out of tune. Equipment broke all the time. I just remember like trying to get from A to B, like the beginning to the end of the set, in itself was like a victory. Like the idea that it could go better than just getting through it at the beginning wasn't really like something we ever considered. And now, you know, thousands of gigs later, we go out on stage and we're like annoyed if one thing didn't go perfectly right, because we're so practiced and we've done it so many times. But when we started out, you know, it really was just a case of like, well, you know, tonight a guitar string didn't break, so high fives, let's have a beer. Which is just kind of, I don't know, I think that's kind of the same for every young band.
Mm-hmm. Was the equipment like not good?
Well, we just couldn't really afford great equipment. I remember we went, so the first day we went into the recording studio to record our first album, we were working with a guy called Marcus Dravs, who's done like amazing albums for Coldplay and Arcade Fire and Florence and the Machine. It's been around for a long time.
Cool.
So he was like a legendary producer, record producer. So we walk into the studio and we had like a couple of guitars. I think I had a keyboard with me. And Ted, the bass player, turned up just empty-handed. And he was like, you've just turned up to the first day of recording, you don't have a bass. And he was like, I just don't own a bass. He was like, okay, first things first, go out and buy a bass and then come back to the studio. So we were like, we were pretty green, as they say, you know, pretty naive about the whole thing.
So wait, he got the bass, right?
He did get the bass, otherwise we wouldn't have made the album. But we were like, we were kicked into shape big time over those few weeks.
What was it like writing your first true album, the record label as a band?
It was a lot like faster than I imagined. You know, when you see documentaries about people in the studio, you see all this like downtime where they're like sitting around and like crafting the songs. And actually our experience was there wasn't that much money to pay for the studio time. So they wanted us in and out. We made the whole first album in 3 weeks, which was fast. And it meant, you know, when you think about every day is like 12 hours, you just kind of get everything you can done. And so it felt like you blinked and then all of a sudden we're finished. And that's my memory of that. It was 2008. We made our first album. So, like I said, we were like 21. But super cool. Like, I'm happy that we didn't do that when we were 17, because it was expensive and it, you know, you don't want to kind of make a bad album.
Right.
So I'm glad that we waited and had the songs that actually could travel and got us to like tour America and do some really cool stuff afterwards.
So wait, like on the timeline, the first album you recorded, that was like after a bunch of like little gigs, right?
Yeah, little gigs and EPs that we made demo tapes. We did some stuff with indie labels that we put out. I recorded them in my parents' attic. So I kind of produced the first three mixtapes, and then we got out there. And because of by traveling and playing South by Southwest, we signed a record deal, and that got us out.
That's incredible. What was it like going on tour for the first time, like singing your songs from the album? What was that like going on like big stage, big crowd of people? What were you feeling?
Terrified. Don't remember it a lot of the time. Kind of black it out. It's full on. But I loved like the sense of achievement that you got when you finished it, and it got easier and easier. And to the point now that, like, honestly, I don't think twice about going out in front of a crowd, you know, of 50,000 people. It doesn't scare me. But originally, going out in front of like 100 people, I felt sick in my stomach. So you kind of, it's like a muscle. You exercise your stage fright and you get through it. And I tell you, the craziest thing is when you first hear people that you've never met before singing the song back to you. Like, that's a mad thing, because you've written these songs kind of in a very private environment. And I remember that. I remember early on, like, seeing just a stranger, like, 10 feet away from me in front of in the audience, and they were like passionately singing those lyrics back. And you're like, you know, who are you? Like, what, I've never even met you. What's your name? Like, what's your story? And you know, that's the power of music sometimes, is it can connect total strangers over like common truths, which I think is cool.
Yeah. I don't know how you handle like, or how you learn to handle that stage fright, because I did this like play thing at a camp one time.
Yeah.
And I forgot my lines and I ran backstage and I told my friend that he knew my lines, even though he didn't. it was a disaster. Everyone was very mad. There were like 50 people watching.
Oh man. But, I mean, you got to try and shake that. So I had stories like that, especially like either at camp or in sort of school plays. And it really haunted me for a while. And it actually made it harder when I got out there with the bands to kind of get over that. But at some point you just realize that, I think you judge yourself before people are judging you. I ain't gotta let that go.
Yeah 100%. What's kind of like the favorite place you've toured with your band, and why, if there was like a specific concert or a specific?
So I loved going to South Africa was amazing. We went down 5 years ago, pretty much exactly. Went down and toured all over. We went to Cape Town, went to Johannesburg, went to Durban. Really interesting trip. And we made a record down there called Johannesburg, which we put out later that year in 2016. And it was just an awesome experience. It felt like somewhere really exotic, and yet a lot of people still like spoke English, and it was weird. It felt like people kind of, there were similarities, and yet it felt like the most foreign place I'd ever been. And we were hosted by some amazing local people who kind of showed us around. We were there for 2 weeks and yeah, just loved it. I'll always remember that trip.
That kind of got me wondering, what's your favorite song to perform?
Kind of changes, honestly, like depending on the mood. Sometimes you're feeling really energetic and like up for it, and you want to bring people a lot of like energy and fire, and then you want to play the upbeat songs. And then other times you're having a bad day and you're feeling a bit kind of grumpy and lonely, and then you want to play the sad song. So it kind of, it really just depends on the mood of the day. That's how it works.
So in another interview, we talked to John Mayer's manager, okay. And we learned we learned a lot about his emergence into a bigger act. I want to know how that went for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it felt, I think from the outside looking in, it always seemed pretty fast. Like one minute we weren't anything, and then the next minute we were on stage at the Grammys playing with Bob Dylan, and I think people felt like it was just an overnight success. But we felt like we had been grafting for a while. The kind of the best way to measure it, I guess, is in touring. So you think about the size of rooms. You go from playing these local clubs in neighborhoods to playing the theaters, and then stepping up from there into arenas and stadiums. And when we got up in 2010, we played our first ever arena. It was in Canada, in Toronto. And that was kind of the moment. I guess it was really just, what I was saying before about a stranger standing 10 feet away from you, singing a song back to you. When that person tells a friend, check out this music, and then those two people tell four or five friends and so on, you can, in theory, and this is what happened to us, get to a point where there's 17,000 people in Toronto who want to come and see you play. And it just snowballed like that. And then we've tried to just write the best music we can ever since and keep on touring. And we've kind of stayed around that size for the last 10 years.
Awesome.
That's insane. I'm wondering, being part of a band, it's four of you guys. Obviously it sounds like you guys kind of get along and such, but were there any kind of hardships or struggles when it comes to the band and when it came to writing a certain song or album or recording?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's weird. It's like a four-way marriage. And it's been hard. And there's brotherly love that's in play, and you're so entwined with each other, and you sleep on, when we started out, we were sharing a hotel room together. And then at this point, you sleep on a tour bus together. So you're all sleeping basically stacked on top of each other in bunk beds. So you do kind of wind each other up sometimes, but I think we were lucky that there was underneath it all friendship. It wasn't we had kind of met through band ads, we talked about. It wasn't, without the band, there's still relationships there that we can always fall back on. So I think we're lucky in that sense. But yeah, there's always been stuff. I mean, one of the hardest bits is honestly when you bring songs in, right? So all four of us write songs, and we at some point in every album have to present our songs to each other. And that's a tough couple of days, because you have no idea what they're going to say. And, if Marcus is going to want to sing them, or if the guys are feeling the vibe. And sometimes people are like, I just don't like that song. And it can hurt. And we got better and better at giving constructive criticism to one another, saying, hey, I love the chorus and I'm not quite sure about the verse. And maybe we could take this one a bit more rocky and less acoustic, or whatever the feedback was, instead of just saying, nah, not into it, which, that's what we were doing early on. And it, I guess we learned from that.
Yeah. You were talking about a tour bus, right?
Yeah.
You must really love what you're doing if you're going to drive around for a while and sleep in such a tight place like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have to love adventure, right? We've seen so much of the world at this point. So much of this country, we've traveled the US. I think I've seen every state apart from Hawaii and Alaska at this point. And you go to sleep after the show on the bus, and you wake up and you're somewhere else, and you have to want to get out there wide-eyed and introduce yourself to people. And it's not every musician loves touring as much as we do, but we're famously kind of a band that loves going out on the road. And America's a really great place to tour, because you can do it all by road. Whereas when you go to Asia, which we did in 2019, and you're jumping from Bangkok to Tokyo to Taipei, you're doing the full big cities of Asia tour. it's long flights and it's a very different feel. You're like staying in hotels and then you're going down, you're checking out the hotel and you're going to the airport, and it's like tiring in a different way. Whereas on the bus, it feels like you're kind of on a road trip, like a gang. And that's really fun.
That sounds like a ton of fun. Is there like a particular like artist, you know, figure in life that was like a main inspiration? It really kept on, like really kept you going? Cause I can only imagine like how many of those long flights one can handle before being like, oh, come on, another like 10-hour flight.
Yeah, there's been like, some, like they've kind of, it's changed over time who's inspired us. But I really love bands who have been around a long time. So I love like the Rolling Stones and the fact that they've just kept on going somehow. U2 for the same reasons, and Radiohead. I think Radiohead was the example that we talked about on day one of the band, of like, you know, it's cool that as a band they've just kept on doing it, like no matter what. And, you know, Rolling Stones, even though the lineup's changed, it's still the Rolling Stones and they persevere. And so I think that's it. Like, you know, I'm 34 right now. And I feel probably about 25, and I hope to be doing this when we're like 50, 60 years old. And if you're the Stones, you're doing it when you're like 150. But yeah, I just, it's all about longevity, I guess.
Yeah.
Have you ever like after a show, just like talk like with somebody who is at the show?
For sure. Like, you mean people who, like these strangers I was talking about, fans who have come to the gig? Yeah. Loads. I mean, it's actually a kind of a part of the job, is to meet people and build those connections. And sometimes they become friends and you stay up, you know, stay in touch with them and build a relationship. There's some people, like we've got this thing called Gentlemen of the Road, which is a name for something of a festival circuit that we tour. And it's our like other brand, I guess, as you put it. And there's a group called the Sisters of the Road, and they come to gigs all over the place. You know, I've met people who have been to like 50 gigs. All over, you know, all over the world. And you respect them because they put food on the table, right? And they support you, and they're there for you, even when like the press, or when, you know, things might take like a downturn at any point and people are like, screw that band. But those are your fans. Those are people that rain or shine, like are with you. And so we love those people. And I kind of want that. I'm a fan of other bands, and I've always appreciated being seen by the bands that I love.
Sounds amazing. You know, you're talking about like how much passion goes on like within the band, and how much passion you have for music as well, because like that keeps you striving. And I'm wondering, how did COVID affect the band? Because, you know, COVID kind of came out of nowhere for everyone.
Yeah, it's been hard. I mean, I haven't seen, I saw the guys briefly. They managed to get over to the US for one trip, but apart from that one trip, I haven't seen them. I haven't seen my family for like 18 months, because I've been in New York and my family's all over in the UK. And if I went back to the UK, I wouldn't be able to get back in. So I'm kind of like stuck here. But yeah, it's just been the distance thing, right? Like, I'm sure both of you understand, you've had people that you haven't been able to see, whether they're like distant friends or relatives, like you might have seen during this time. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a bit like that. Weird to have gone from 14 years of being right on top of each other to just not really seeing each other at all.
That's great.
But I'm glad to see us all coming out of it. And like, the vaccination programs are amazing, and it's meaning that people can actually just get back to normal life, which, you know, hopefully in like 5-10 years we'll just forget this ever happened, right? Like, that's the dream.
Yeah,
hopefully
that would be nice.
That'd be so nice.
It's like, you know they're gonna make movies about this.
Oh, for sure. For years. Oh. Yeah. Until people don't watch those movies anymore. There's a film called Contagion. Did you guys see that?
I've heard of it.
That's like weirdly prophetic about what is about to happen with COVID, and it came out 5 years ago. And it's about a virus that starts in China and it like shuts down the whole world. It's crazy. It's a crazy film, given that what just happened.
That is crazy.
That scares me. That scares me too.
I always saw things about like the show The Simpsons, like predicting like
stuff I know.
That happened.
I know they do it too much for it not to be more than a coincidence. Right?
Exactly. You start wondering if the people making it are time travelers.
I love this. Maybe this show could morph into being like a conspiracy theory podcast. Right.
Maybe.
Crazy theories.
We got it.
Next top 50 artists. You don't know them because they don't know you. 2050. Next top 50 artists. Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
What's the advice that you would just you'd give to a 13-year-old or just a kid who's trying to pursue being a musician?
I think that the main piece of advice is to get involved and participate. If that's what you want to do, like just lean into it and do it as much as you can and you have the time for and you have the means to do it. Don't like stress about the results or like what comes of it or if stuff gets in the way. I know a ton of people who wanted to be musicians at 13 and are now lots of other things in career-wise. But I also know a bunch of people who are musicians who wanted to be musicians at 13. So I wouldn't stress about it. I also wouldn't worry too much about what your parents say about this, because my dad especially was not particularly convinced that being a musician was like a viable thing to do with my life. So like I set out to prove that wrong. And but I think that if someone's like, I would love to try being a musician, and just give it a go and don't overthink it. I really have no like regrets from that period of my life. I think, you know, a lot of it is about like heartbreak and learning about relationships and stuff like that, both friends and also kind of starting to date people. So, you know, I just think it's good to kind of be all in and then know that like it's okay if things don't work out. If you like fall out with a friend that you've been friends with for 5 or 6 years and then you go back to camp this summer and they're just not the same person anymore, like it's cool. Like just keep it moving. Go deep, but don't retreat into like into a shell or get into your phone or into your room and like almost get too scared to go and live life. I was so lucky that we were kind of just my like 13 to 18 teenage years were just ahead of Facebook. So I was just before social media really kicked in and obviously before TikTok and Instagram and everything like that. So we were still, but we had mobile phones, we were out, we were doing stuff. But it was like we had our heads up a lot more and we were falling. You know, my teenage years in my mind was like about friendships and relationships and learning about love and pain and all this sort of stuff. You know, not necessarily as deeply as I understand it now as a dad, but in a way that I like first got it. Like I told someone I loved them as a teenager. And I'm proud that I did that. You know, I don't think it's about being scared of feeling.
Yeah. And last quick question. Is there anyone you would like to see on this podcast that you know? Either someone you know or someone you don't. Probably someone you know. But for season 2, which will be starting in September.
I think you guys should try and get one of my favorite basketball players on here, a guy called Joe Harris. He plays for the Nets. It'd be amazing. And he's like a really sweet guy, but has had an amazing life and would be cool, you know, because obviously the Nets are just having the time right now. But
yeah,
there you go, representing. Yeah, but it'd be great to get him on and talk about, you know, the journey to becoming a professional basketball player.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And thank you guys so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed this one. Peace out.
That's it. Peace out. Thank you. Thank you so much, Ben. This was such an amazing episode.
Yeah. Good luck with it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Things Every 13-Year-Old Should Know.
Be sure to follow us on social media
and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
One more thing. If there's anything you'd like to know about,
or if you have an idea of someone you'd like to hear us talk with,
get in touch with us at thingsevery13yearoldshouldknow.com.
Thanks again.